Good morning, New Haven. Start to a sunny start to the week here, New Haven, on Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. And good morning to New Haven Mayor Tony Harf. So nice to see you.
Oh, good morning, Paul. How you doing?
I'm doing well. It's great to hear, see you in the studio for your regular Mayor Monday checkup on what you and we are up to in New Haven. We've been up to a lot the last few days. We got some stuff to talk about today. And you can join the conversation by tweeting a question, or excuse me, just call in if you want to call in, 203-872-7ELM. You can be like Bob and be on the show with the mayor, 203-872-7356. Today's program is made possible in part thanks to support from Bertram Moses and Devlin PC, from Gateway Community College in downtown New Haven. Thanks, Gateway and Bertram. So, Mayor Harf, how was your day off?
What day off?
That was the trick question. We've been following you. You don't seem to take a day off. I take a day off. I come back on. I read about stuff you've been doing. You've been pretty busy.
Yeah, it's been a busy time. Yeah.
When was the last time you had a day off?
It's been a while, yeah.
Do you consider, like, if you go to a coffee house for a while or go see a movie, is that your quote-unquote day off?
Well, it's my time off. It's usually not a full day.
You need a day off. I vote for you to have a day off.
Well, thank you.
But stuff's been busy. Like, for instance... Yeah, on Saturday, it was the year of the rooster.
Yes.
And they had we had our usual big colorful parade up Whitney Avenue with the big lion dances. I love those pictures.
And the lions are so cute.
But you had you were at the actual parade?
Yes.
And that was in the morning.
And it was cold.
It was cold. And what was your favorite part of the parade?
I mean, I really love the lions. They are so ornate, and they actually bat their eyes. And they wiggle their ears. I mean, they're so cute.
So why don't we have the lion? Every year it's the lion, but it's the year of the rooster. You know what that's all about?
Well, it's the lion dancers. And so they dance. And every year, according to the Chinese zodiac, it's a different animal. And so this year, it's the year of the rooster.
And it's also a year in which we didn't just have a lion dance, but you invited some dignitaries from China to a reception. Was it a Woolsey Hall?
It was at, it was at Woolsey Hall.
And that was in the evening.
That was in the evening.
Saturday evening, you had the general counsel, Chinese general counsel from New York was up here. And there's a native of the Chinese city of Changsha. Am I saying that right?
Changsha.
And that's going to be our new sister city.
Yes.
And you seem pretty excited about this. And you had a little reception to say, we're getting this going and we're inviting your mayor over to make it official.
Right. They have a new mayor.
New mayor.
Yeah, and we're inviting, I believe it's a him, we're inviting him over as his first visit to the United States to come to New Haven. Last year, Andy Wolf went to...
That's your director of arts, tourism and culture and arts.
Arts, culture, and tourism. He's got a new name that he's promoting, though. I've forgotten what it is, but I'll let you know. I kind of like it. So he went to Changsha. It's actually Changsha. I think it was in October.
Yeah, he came on the radio to talk about it. Yeah, he had a great trip.
Yeah, and so they signed the papers then with the former mayor. There's a new mayor now, and is very excited. It's a historic city because it has a long-time relationship with Yale University and Yale China. They started a school there. It started in the middle school years, Yale. High school, and it's now a high school, and now is one of the preeminent schools in all of China. And they also started a hospital there. And again, it's one of the largest hospital systems in all of China.
Wow.
So it's so there's a long relationship with Changsha.
What was interesting to me, Mayor Harp, is so you have this relationship you're starting with China at a time when relationships between the governments of the United States and China are up in the air. President Trump has begun by promising a trade war, and he's hired people in his administration to deal with China who are hawks on China, based partly on a two-year-old, this one's beyond my expertise level, but it's based on, Harry, a two-year-old view of China supposedly keeping their currency low, but even though in the last 2 years it's gone high to kind of favor exporting stuff here and not importing goods. But in general, our relationships the relationship is touching. Also, we're challenging them in the South China Sea about islands there. And people are nervous about we could even a trade war or a war. And what role does a sister city relationship play in that broader perspective?
Well, it really creates a people-to-people relationship with China. And so that it's certainly not at the level of premier and presidents. And, you know, the national official status towards China, which is, by the way, a huge, huge, huge country with many provinces. Changsha is in the Hunan province. And so I think that it's important at the person-to-person level to keep ties open. You know, New Haven through Yale has had a relationship with China in this area for over 116 years. While they've gone from one form of government to another, as have we. I mean, we do it every 4 years or every 8 years, depending upon how you look at it. But there has
The Cultural Revolution, in which our relationship with Changsha kind of took a dive for a while, and then it got reestablished.
Well, I think that we continue to have a relationship, especially with the medical school and other and our school, I call it Yale School.
And in the modern era, there's a lot of talk about the reemergence of city-states, economies that aren't national in scope, but are a city or a region that do business globally. And, you know, California has talked about climate change and the impacts it can, as almost the size of a nation, can strike on its own. But also greater New York, the Boston area, Chattanooga, all these places see themselves as sort of having their own foreign policy, at least when it comes to trade. I wonder if we'd want to do trade with China.
Well, you know, I think that we are already doing trade with China to some extent. And certainly if there are ways that we can benefit one another, we should. And what maybe you're forgetting is that we're doing the same thing. We sent people over to Hanover, Mass. Last year. We're trying to which is the international trade show for companies all around the world that want to locate in different parts of the world. And we're trying to get them to think about locating here in New Haven. And we're in the process of trying to build support, financial support, so if anybody wants to help, to send a delegation over to the International Trade Show this spring.
Where's that going to be?
I believe it's still in Hanover.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
And so so we see ourselves in that light. I know we're just, my husband used to say, you know, there's the Big Apple and then there's the cranberry, and if it's more the size of a cranberry, but we're still, I think, very important. And I think if we're going to grow Connecticut, we've got to make sure that when Connecticut goes to these things, that they take into consideration our area. Oftentimes they look at Fairfield County, or they'll look in the Hartford area, and not really think about the biotech and the advanced manufacturing that happens here. And I think it's important for us to have an international face too.
Uh-huh. And talking about an international face, you also were working on Sunday. Sunday was not a day off. You were out there, I believe, at 10 a.m. at Wilberforce High School when they started a Run for Refugees. This is IRIS, Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services. That's an AC that has relocated hundreds of refugees from around the world here in New Haven and greater New Haven. And every year they have a run. And this year, because of the President Trump's executive order banning travel from seven nations and indefinitely banning refugees coming from the civil war in Syria, where something like 467,000 people mm-hmm. have been displaced at last count, there was an outpouring of support. 2,600 people came to run. It sold out.
Right.
And after the run, you helped lead a march down Orange Street, I believe it was, in support of refugees, saying, despite what's happening nationally in the United States, this is a city that will always welcome refugees. We want you here. This is your community. You marched to the Green, had a rousing rally where people spoke, refugees spoke about their lives. And New Haven really showed its support for refugees. I thought it was a moving day for us. Lucy Gelman captured it in about 9 different ways for the New Haven Independent, a Facebook live stream, and great story. Tell me about how you felt participating in that, and what the day meant to you.
Well, it was a great day, but in all candor, I was on the Green. I didn't march. You know, it's when you think about the work that IRIS does, and when you think about how the United States is visible in all of these war-torn areas around the world, and that for us to be effective, we have to have people on the ground who understand the culture, who are our friends. And often that's who these refugees are. They're people who've helped us all across the world. And I think it's unconscionable for us to turn our back on people that we needed and continue to need, where when we're in these foreign countries, these people who take their lives into their hands to help us, oftentimes against regimes or initiatives that are harmful to them and their families. And so to hear the stories of hope and really the feeling of here we are, here's what we've done to help out, and then you're turning your back on our relatives who are there, you're making it difficult for us to go back home or for our relatives to come and visit us is
well, it's affected New Haven in several ways. So as you said, we've resettled families. There's actually a cartoon strip running in the New York Times Week in Review every Sunday about a refugee family that just came to New Haven. Mm-hmm. And they don't say New Haven in the strip, but it's actually a New Haven family. It's been kind of interesting. But we've been known, like when Mike Pence was the governor of Indiana, would not take a Syrian family. We brought them to New Haven. You were there that day welcoming them. We have quite an army of religious organizations, volunteers who resettle refugees. I know at our synagogue, they help them get tutors for learning English, to drive them around to errands, that kind of stuff. And a lot of churches are involved. As a city, we've officially made a statement. That's what kind of people want here. So on one hand, there are a dozen families over the next month that were going to come, who now that's in jeopardy, although with legal stays, we don't know how this ban is going to play out. But also we are home to universities. And we have either people can't get in to study or teach, or who are here, but their family members are stuck. So this has real implications on the ground for New Haven.
It really does. And it seems so, I every time I hear or watch these television shows and I see people in the central part of America acting as if they're so frightened of, and that this is reasonable. And I'm thinking to myself, here we are on the coast where if anything is likely to happen, it's going to happen here. Here we are where people first emerge into America. And we're not, you know, we're comfortable with people coming into this country.
Well, data's hard to look at because, you know, there have been no attacks, terrorist attacks from refugees or really immigrants in this country. I mean, people, when they're getting all worried about this in America, they're not talking about Dylann Roof or, you know, even the people in San Bernardino was not an immigrant. But it just takes one to scare people because there is terrorism. They had terrorism attack in Canada. We've had terrorism attacks, although ours tend to be homegrown. They had terrorism attack in Turkey the other day. You have France. They're going to happen. And demagogues and politics can really scare people with what happens in one or two instances. One day there will be an immigrant who will commit one. Just like, you know, a very small percentage of the immigrant population as opposed to the general population commits crimes. But it's going to happen because they're human beings, and there's a way you can rally people up with that fear without looking at the facts of what kind of fear you're really under. And the fact that it's a scary thing that we have to live with the fact that terrorism is going to happen. It happens, and no matter what you do, it's possible. I think both President Bush and President Obama did a very good job of preventing repeats of 9/11. You know, we always talk about what they did wrong. I think there was actually a success story in our country, how we've done a lot of good work, including with the NSA, and the police departments in preventing it. But it's going to happen. And then and then there's always this backlash.
Well, there is. But, you know, like it happens, but not to the extent that this ban has impeded other kinds of things. I think it was overkill.
Well, there's no evidence it makes us safer, given that nobody is coming into this heavily vetted program
right,
has committed these acts.
It doesn't make us safer. And as a matter of fact, it might, in some respects, make us less safe. If you think about community-based policing and people not feeling like they should share anything with any authorities. But this was just overkill. It wasn't well thought out. And, you know, you think about it. If a woman did that, if a person of color did that as the head of this country, people would be outraged. And yet you hear a lot of people try to make it seem reasonable.
Until you watch Saturday Night Live, then it's kind of funny what they do to them. They were pretty good this week. Did you see Scott Spicer, Melissa McCarthy, Scott Spicer?
I didn't see
that. One of the funniest routines I ever saw.
Well, of course, it's them. But, you know, like when they go into the Midwest, and, you know, honestly, I was talking to my daughter, and she was listening to some nurses in one of our hospitals here and basically saying, why don't we just let Trump do what he's doing? Why are people protesting? He's trying to make us safer. there are a lot of people in America who believe that. And I think that the fact that he has made people feel less safe because of this issue is irresponsible.
But it is responsible to remind people that you're listening to Mayor Monday on Dateline New Haven on WNHH Radio, your home for community radio, 103.5 FM, and live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. It's Mayor Monday. And people were also protesting in New Haven on Saturday, a much smaller protest than the refugee march. There were about a couple hundred people. They were downtown, and everything went wrong. Right. And what it was very interesting, there are a couple of issues I want to tease out with you here. Because in the end, this creates a real dilemma for our local police about, so there are protests just about every day in New Haven, around the country. I don't believe there's one today, but there were the last few days. And this one on Saturday was based on the immigration orders. And we've had a tradition in New Haven since, I guess, the early 80s. This is when you and I start talking like the old people in the bar. Remember in the 80s when we started having these rallies? And like starting in the 80s, remember how it was so surprising how all of a sudden a protest that was always worked out with the police, and protest organizers realize that the police are not the enemy and that they're working people too, and let's not make it hard for them. So you'd have these mass protests with the unions and others or anti-apartheid where they would work out the police. Here are the streets we're going to block. The police say, here's where we'll help you do it so that you don't tie up traffic and inconvenience people too much or in any way endanger safety. If you want to get arrested, here's how we'll do it so we don't have to fight with you and you know, endanger ourselves. And we've had this for a long time, and we continue to have it to today, where we try to do it differently in New Haven, and we're not perfect, and you've heard me criticize when it's not perfect, but we really try to protect people's First Amendment rights and to coordinate protests to make sure that nothing goes wrong. And a lot went wrong on Saturday. So the first thing that went wrong, hold on a second, Lucy, what's... Oh. We got a cord stuck here.
Oh, we got a cord stuck. Oh, kind of reminds me of when I walk two dogs together, you know?
Yeah, the leash is okay, I unplugged the cord. Sorry about that. So on Saturday, you had all these people protesting. They were downtown. Everything's going okay. And the police department, you know, realistically said, we haven't been arresting people at protests. We're, you know, we do it right in New Haven. And they didn't have a big police protest. I think we just, and but then the police, the organizers of the protest did not coordinate with the police what they did next. As you were preparing this Chinese event, they were walking down to Route 34, which is a state road, the Route 34 connector, what's left of it by Yale New Haven Hospital. And they blocked the state road without coordinating that with the police. So the New Haven police weren't even there. And it's a state road, so the state police came. The state police do not have our approach to dealing with protest, and they don't have the relationships, to
That's
be
right.
fair. And they had a problem, which is that emergency vehicles had to get through. So you had these protesters on that road, and there was actually a woman who needed an emergency medical procedure who could not get through to the hospital. And they had to do the procedure in the ambulance.
Yes.
So they bring these dogs, these attack dogs, which given the history of how dogs have been used in protests, we were a little more wary of them in New Haven. We use them sometimes, but usually not like that. We often use them to sniff out drugs or find evidence or things like that. And they start snarling at all these people. It gets very tense on Route 34. But, and here's the important but, there wasn't any problem with the police and the protesters there. The protesters finally left and marched up Church Street again without the coordination with the police. So by this time, it's now back on New Haven turf. But the state police decide we have to find the leader. And they talk to the lawyer for the group, Patricia Kane, who says there isn't any one leader. But they decide that of all the leaders, there are a bunch of people who have bullhorns and were organizing the people. It's one guy, Norman Clement, he's an older guy. They're going to go looking for him. So you have this mass crowd on Church Street, 150 or so people marching up back towards Chapel in the Green. And state police, local police, and on the way, local police arrest one guy they say had shoved a cop. He says he didn't. He's this Buddhist kid. We've known him growing up in New York, New Haven, whatever. So he gets arrested. So then Norman Clemens, this organizer, goes up to one of the state police with a bullhorn, which is kind of obnoxious right in his face. So why are you arresting him? Why are you arresting him? And the state police say, oh, you're the guy. We want you. Now, there are different accounts what happened next. We do know that they had the police dog scaring the bejesus out of everybody. And this police dog got wild and actually bit three cops, not the people. Everyone's panicking. There's pandemonium. This guy's running away. The police say he's running from us, so we have to chase him with the dog and the pepper spray. A couple witnesses tell us that, in fact, he was running because he was being sprayed. Whichever way it happened, about four blocks from where the problem had been, a new problem was created. And it was total loss of control. By the time I wasn't there, because it was the Sabbath, as soon as Sabbath was over, 5:55, I was getting the email, you know, the police threw pepper spray at us. They had set the dogs on us. It was brutal. And no one's ever actually suggesting that any citizens were violent, except for the possibility the Buddhist guy might have shoved the cop or not. This got out of control. And what's interesting to me, there are a number of things that are interesting to me about this, and I'm really interested in what you have to say about it, Mayor Harp. I know the police department for the last week has been very concerned that we have this tradition in New Haven, we've been able to keep the peace at protests, and we've got a routine going, but something new is happening. For beginners, there's a group of self-described anarchists who go to certain cities and cover their faces with black masks. They come with this particular intention of breaking whatever the route or the arrangement is and actually attacking cops and stores. And we've seen this in Washington, a couple places. And that's not what most of the protesters are like, right? And there's a history in this country, by the way, as recently as 1999 with the WTO convention, or 2000 with the Republican convention in New York, where there are actually police provocateurs who go into that group to start the violence. And then the provocateur steps back and they arrest them. But there are also genuinely these people who want to do it. So whatever's happening, this is happening. So our police department all of a sudden has to worry, how the heck are we going to deal with this? This is a new situation. We believe in community policing. We believe in protecting the right to protest, that we cooperate with them, they cooperate with us, and then we make sure nobody gets hurt. All of a sudden, you have the situation where somebody can get hurt because somebody comes who wants to make them hurt. And then also, with the vast majority of protests in New Haven, they've been so peaceful, well-coordinated with the cops. But you did have a group here who does freelance. They do go take it somewhere else. And as we saw on Saturday, they want to push the limit. And as we saw on Saturday, they endangered people's lives. So the police department already have been spending the week wondering, how are we going to deal with this new reality, preserve our values, but also keep the public and our cops safe? The cops are scared. Remember, the cops were bitten in the hand on this thing on Saturday. And so what comes next? How does it look from you? How are you and your administration going to anticipate this?
Well, you know, I think that one of the things that our police officers learn is de-escalation. And for people who don't want to be de-escalated, it's awfully hard to do that. But I believe that we can do that. I think that by bringing the dogs in, which, again, if it had not been a state road and they had contacted us, there would not have been dogs, because that's just not what we do. That's not how we handle it.
Yeah.
There were some names in that article that I read that I now know how to protest in New Haven. And I think that we've got to sit down with those people that we know who are likely to engage in protest, maybe get people from other areas who might help to incite them. But we and our police department have got to sit down with the leaders of these groups and explain to them how not to get arrested and what they need to do in order to let our police department know where they're going to be. And the other thing, and to let them know where we have jurisdiction and where we don't. And we have jurisdiction throughout the city, but then you have another police department that has jurisdiction on state roads.
And, you know, the same group that was protesting, and we're very supportive of that group. You actually have been to some of their rallies.
Right.
When they're not marching into your office unannounced. And and the Friday night before, 8 days before that protest, they actually had been at Trumbull Street, and it actually urged women marching with strollers to go onto the highway in the dark.
Oh.
And they didn't do that. So if I'm hearing you correctly, you think there are two issues here. One is you think that we have to double down on de-escalation, not bring out the dogs.
Right.
But on the other hand, you also need to be touching base again with the protest organizers to try to communicate about staying in the right jurisdiction and planning it to avoid harm to the public.
Harm to the public and also to their own members. Because if people, and not to use harm that they've tried to escalate as a way to have people angry with our police. And so I think we need to bring them in and have that conversation.
Yeah. Now there's a feeling among most groups in town that they're working with the police. There are groups in town who feel like the police are not carrying out community policing. They don't see them as their ally. That's a challenge then to work with them to how you're going to coordinate a protest against them.
But at least, you know, you have the conversation with their leaders. If they feel that way, you still bring them in. And at least part of their argument that the police are not working with them is sort of neutralized a little bit, because the police will be bringing them in and saying, look, this is how you do it if you don't want to be arrested. These are the kind of things.
Or they might like to be arrested, be coordinated arrests. Now, I'm talking about, you know, you and me remembering the 80s when they started having the anti-apartheid arrests. Sure. And they asked to be arrested, and the police coordinated it in a way so nobody got hurt, including the arrestees.
Exactly.
And the public safety was not endangered.
And we, you know, it happened last year with New Haven Rising.
Yeah.
There were a number of people. They knew that they wanted some people to be arrested. As a matter of fact, you got in a different part of the line if you were going to be arrested. And it was all worked out in advance. And we can do the same thing.
Yeah, this is going to be trying times.
Yes.
This is definitely going to be trying times. But people are very upset about Donald Trump, what it means for the city. And even though our official parts of our city have rallied with the resistance to Donald Trump, a lot's happening in our streets. I think that this community policing is going to be put to the test.
It is going to be put to the test. And I've got to say that I think our police department is ready for that test. They have seen it coming for a while.
All right. Do we have a call, Lucy? All right. So am I guessing it's Bob? Bob, you're on with Mayor Tony Harp. How you doing, buddy?
Well, first of all,
thanks,
Paul, I wish I could have chimed in on this because that was the exact question I was going to ask the mayor, and I'm going to make some points and make some suggestions. I did see some video, but like maybe 10 or 20 seconds of it on the news of the Church Street situation downtown.
That's what we're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, and I heard you talk also about the situation on the connector. But the Church situation got out of control between the protesters and the police. You could see the dogs. And you also, at the same time, had shoppers downtown who really probably didn't know what was going on, and then all of a sudden probably had to run for cover or run for their lives when they saw these dogs and protesters and police clashing down. Now, here's my suggestion. The New Haven Police Department, who I'm not very fond of to begin with, needs to look at like a situation like in Boston, what the police do there when they have large crowds, when they won the Super Bowl, or situations in New York City where they have the New Year's celebration and so on and so forth down there.
What do they do, Bob?
I just think the New Haven Police Department did not know how to handle that situation on Saturday.
Right, but just so you remember, Bob, that it was the state police who went into that crowd on Church and Chapel looking for a person they decided was the ringleader, and approached him with dogs and pepper spray amid a chaotic crowd. Just to be clear, I think the New Haven police acknowledged they were caught off guard. They didn't expect this thing to go on to state property. They didn't expect the organizers to meander from the plan. And the New Haven police did make an arrest that some people are challenging. But don't you think it's fair to say that it was the state police?
I saw one police officer push a woman backwards.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I saw on the TV news.
And was that state or city cop? Because I've been looking at that video
carefully.
That was
a city cop.
That was a city cop.
I mostly saw New Haven police vehicles at Church and Chapel. There was a large crowd of people there.
Yeah.
And I saw them try to push the crowd back. Now, don't forget,
you have protesters. Too, yeah.
And you have shoppers, and you have kids down there.
Okay, and if you go to the story,
teenagers, little kids, everything are down there on Saturday shopping.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Bob, and thanks so much for the question. I'm going to bring it now to Mayor Harp. Bob, thanks for calling Mayor Monday at WNHH Radio with Mayor Tony Harp. So what do you say, Mayor?
So, you know, I think that one of the things is that we've got to continue our training, but we've also got to reach out to the state police and help them understand how we are supposed to do things here in New Haven, and, you know, offer training to them as well. We just don't operate in the way that other police forces do, and we've got to make sure that anyone else who's policing in our community, and we have several other police departments in our community besides our police department, that they're on board with the way that we do things.
Hampton, for sure. What was interesting to me, Mayor Harp, was the reaction to this story. So I posted it late, like probably 11:40 on Saturday. It was instantly being read a lot and commented on a lot. And some people were very upset about what the police did. But for most people, including people who don't agree with Donald Trump, who agree in the need for protest, they were so upset by the protesters blocking access to a hospital and putting the police and the public and themselves in danger that they had a hard time getting past that. And it made me think about the past before those old days you and I are talking about, but the old days, when it became hard to talk about police misconduct when the organizers themselves have acted in a way that alienates most people. So most people say, we didn't vote for Trump. We're glad you're out on the street, but I got to get to the hospital.
Yeah.
And why aren't you coordinated? The police didn't do this to you in New Haven. They're not the enemy. Why are you doing that? And that is a... I found that, and I was surprised the extent to which you couldn't have the two conversations at once. I know what you're saying. You have to have the conversation about how the police can learn from this and deal with this because there are going to be more protests that's going to come up again. In the public mind, my sense was, and I could be wrong because you have a better handle than I do on what people are saying out in the public. I feel like the biggest thing people heard in this was, what was wrong with those people blocking that entrance to the hospital?
Well, I think that's kind of... something that anybody who sees that happen are going to wonder, you know, is your protest worth someone having their health undermined and really maybe even their life threatened if they're trying to get to the hospital in an ambulance? And I don't think it was well thought out. That's why I think we've got to bring them in. We know who these people are. And we've got to say, look, you know, we want you to have your voice. We want you to protest things that you don't think are right. That's one of the ways in which we change as a democracy. But you've got to do it within a context that keeps everybody safe, your marchers as well as any of the other public.
Mm-hmm. In a context that keeps everybody safe.
Right.
Now, there's another battleground called Hartford, Connecticut. That used to be your stomping grounds as a state senator, Tony Hart. Now you're the mayor. You're going back up there, I assume, this week for the beginning, not the formal beginning, but the real beginning of the state legislative session when the governor on Wednesday unveils his budget.
The budget address, right.
And you're ready. I got it hot off the presses. Thank you for bringing it to me.
Sure.
The city's legislative agenda.
Yeah.
And my understanding from reviewing this is that front and center on this agenda is trying to preserve our state aid at a time when there's a $1.5 billion deficit that they're wrestling with in the upcoming fiscal year.
Yes. It's really important, as I say almost at every show, we're a city that is very small.
18.7 square miles. All right.
That's right. half of our city is inhabited by not-for-profit institutions, the biggest of which are in the constitution of the state and not impacted by general statutes. So the legislature itself can't do much about it. And so it's important that the payment in lieu of taxes that we get, because for many decades now, the state has recognized that we need help in order to keep our city going, that we are an important city for work in this region, if not the state, in terms of driving the overall economy of the state. And so it's really important to us that this budget is not balanced on our back. And so the governor met with a number of us mayors last week in Hartford, the Hartford mayor, Waterbury mayor, Bridgeport mayor, me.
Do you guys carpool when you go up there?
No, not really.
So I remember when they used to go up, Stephanie used to go up Maturo from East Haven, used to stop for all smoke breaks. You know?
And so what he wanted to say was that he thought that that he recognizes how important our bigger cities are that carry the brunt of the poor, of have the biggest educational problems in the state, and that his budget is going to reflect deference to the larger cities. And so he didn't tell us exactly how or what, but he did want to let us know that he recognizes the heavy weight that we carry as cities.
Well, what about specifics? Did he give you any previews? You said he didn't tell you how or what. Did he say that he's getting rid of the property tax credit, for instance, although I think that's going to come back in, is my guess.
He really didn't. He did say that that they're going to take a look at all of the formulas, the payment in lieu of taxes, the educational cost sharing grant, and that he was going to make it more in his proposal. They were going to take into consideration more of the things that would have them more operational in our bigger cities and our poorer cities throughout the poorer towns throughout the state. And so, but the real question is, for me is, because I have said all along that one of the problems we've had, and we will balance our budget this year, but what has made it difficult is the cost shifting that went on last year from the state to the city. So, for example,
The lockup.
You know, it's
was that $1.5 to $2 million?
Yeah. That was
at the last minute after your budget was drawn up and debated. You were suddenly told that in, I think it was a month or two, you were suddenly running the state prisoner lockup at 1 Union Avenue.
Right. And, you know, changing the rules for LOSIP was another one.
And that's how you get reimbursed for patching potholes.
That's right. Potholes and other kinds of road work. The ECS.
Educational cost sharing.
Yeah. Losing about 700.
I'm the acronym translator, by the way. That's my that's my role in life.
Learning late, early on in the middle of the year, that you're going to lose $750,000. These are things that you have to worry about and that you don't really know. So our delegation, everybody might see a bright picture, and then sort of embedded within the assumptions are cost shifts that are worrisome.
So you're saying watch the cost shifts.
Yeah,
looking
exactly.
at the headlines, the announcements, look what they're shifting from what the state's covering to what the city's going to be hooked. Now, I've been looking at your pamphlet here about your legislative agenda, interesting stuff. We're going to ask our readers to follow along during the session. We're going to have a chart of the 26 top priorities for the city Good. At the state and show week by week how they're advancing. And one of them, you have something called a Second Chance High School
right.
for 275 young people between 17 and 21 who are in adult ed, trying to get their high school degrees. They've been involved with the court system. And tell me what this is an idea about.
Well, right now there are young people who can be 17. They are overaged and undercredited, which means that they're not going to graduate from high school on time. Oftentimes, they're counseled out of the overall school system, and they are referred to adult education. So we have about almost 300 of those students at adult education. Now, the problem with adult education, and it's a wonderful program for older adults, but if you don't have your diploma and you're still trying to get your diploma there, we get about $900 per child or per individual at adult ed. In our school system, we pay about $13,000 per individual.
And is that because an older person who's doing other things in his life, supporting himself, herself, is coming in on the side, working hard, directed to get this degree, whereas this population that's really still high school age, just after high school age, is more like a conventional student?
Well, I think that it's because our Constitution requires a free and public education for young people up to a certain age. And when you're older, it doesn't necessarily do that. And so we don't fund adult ed in the same way that we fund our education for K through 12. But the truth of the matter is, it's in our interest to make sure these young people between 17 and 21 have access to education, the educational supports that exist in our high schools. And so what this program would do is to create within adult ed a high school that gets more money, probably still not the $13,000, but a lot more, to provide wraparound services, the kind of counseling these young people might need, the kind of tutoring that they need to move them quickly through that system so that they can get their diploma and move on with their lives.
You said it was $13,000 versus how much does the adult kid get?
$900.
Wow, that's a big difference. You're also talking about the Barbell Club. Now, remember Bummy Moore?
Yes.
So the Barbell Club is sort of like the Q House, the youth center that was in the Hills, Trowbridge Square neighborhood.
Yeah.
Which
Hill
is
Cooperative Youth.
Hill Cooperative Youth Services, HCYS.
Yeah.
That's the acronym. And but they called it the Barbell Club in Trowbridge Square. And I remember going there. It was an amazing place. Here we are with our old people at the bar stories. But remember this guy, Bummy Moore, ran that for years.
For years.
And kids would just swarm around him, and all they wanted to do was touch him.
I know, because he was a cool guy.
They just wanted to touch him and then go play basketball, touch him, go get homework, just be recognized by Bummy.
Yeah.
And that place has been closed for years. It's been shuttered. There have been plans of what we do with it. And a lot of our attention has been on the Q House. But you and members of the Board of Alders have talked about wanting to have more youth centers back in town.
Right.
And so now you're going to $4 million at the state to try to reopen the Barbell Club.
Yes, we are. We tried actually last year too, and it didn't happen. And as a result, what we are going to do is really work a lot harder on it this year to try to get the resources to build up that club. We think it's really important for the Hill North and Hill South for kids to have a place to go that is safe, and that supports them in the same way that we hope that the Dixville Q House will support the Dixville New Hallville kids.
I feel like you've walked into a dream or a movie set when you go to the Trowbridge Square. Because, you know, on the one hand, it's separated from everything. You're driving down to the train station where Church Street South is. On the other hand, you go on Howard Avenue and the fire station, the main thoroughfare. And within that is the nine blocks that were laid out just like the original nine squares in New Haven around a central green.
Right.
And actually started in the mid-1800s as a abolitionist dream of a racially integrated neighborhood. Mm-hmm. You still got these kind of cool worker houses around there and this wonderful green, and in the center of it, the now shuttered Barbell Club.
Right.
And you guys have, through your Live Wilson initiative, I know you've been doing some housing programs that succeeded, you and former Mayor DeStefano, in preventing some of the out-of-town property flippers and slumlords from getting some of the houses that were lost during the mortgage crisis, and that you have succeeded in getting people owning some of the houses there around Trowbridge Square. It does seem like this youth center could be a part of stabilizing and bringing back that wonderful, wonderful neighborhood, that little secret corner in our city.
No, it's a beautiful little place, and they have those cute little gingerbread looking houses.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
It's really a beautiful part of the city that most people don't know exists.
And then you're also talking about a women's ex-offender halfway house. Now, I thought there was one that Project Moore started. Wasn't there one?
Well, I've been told by my reentry folks that we don't have one anymore. And if we do, it's inadequate, so that we really have got to do more for women who are reentering into our city.
We do think of males, don't we, when we think of reentry?
We do. Well, there tend to be more men reentering, but there are women, too, that also need our help and support.
And here you go, you want the sugary drinks tax.
Yes.
You and what do they call you? Some of the Trump voters will call you like nanny state, right? You want to tax sugar. But actually, we've been hearing that
communities, it's bad for you.
People have been taxing sugary, added sugar beverages. Actually, they say that people are drinking less with the tax, and that it is working in the fight against diabetes.
Well, I think it's really important. One of the things that we started to see 10 years ago is kids as young as 5 years old getting type 2 diabetes.
Wow.
And if you think about the progression of the disease, it takes 20 years, but by the time you've had it for 20 years, it starts impacting your vital organs, it impacts your circulation, you could start having amputations. I mean, it's a horrible disease.
But you're also talking about emergency generators at senior centers, you're talking about more farmers markets, coupons, along with this 1 cent per ounce tax and added sugar. So you got a lot to do up at the Capitol.
We've got lots of work.
And we wish you luck. We're going to be following that. You're listening to Mayor Monday on WNHH at your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenandbend.org. Just a few minutes left. And what I thought we'd do, Mayor Harp, since you're on a microphone, we'll do a little rehearsal here, okay?
Oh, okay.
You're giving your State of the City tonight. And you, just for us, you could start, you know, want to do a dry run here?
Well, no, it's going to be...
Welcome, members of the Board of Aldermen, all the potentates I'm going to say hi to and that kind of stuff.
We're going to say hi to everyone. You know, I want to recognize, I really do, you know, our partnership with the New Haven Board of Alders has really gotten to be a very good partnership. We're going to recognize that partnership and how it really takes all of us, the executive branch as well as the legislative branch, working together, because everything that we've been able to achieve... And I would argue that we are the most vibrant city in Connecticut.
I'd second you on that one.
And it's really because
not a lot of competition, but I think we are vibrant too.
We are vibrant. And we've got a great, and it takes really the administration as well as the Board of Alders to make that.
So one theme tonight is going to be cooperation with executive and legislative branch.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to hear that.
Now, this is not
speech.
Something you've told me. I'm just guessing on this next one I think is going to come up in the speech, okay? Tell me if I'm right or wrong. Right. We just had a remarkable new grand list certified where our grand list went up 8.4% in 1 year.
Yes.
That means the value of property in New Haven went up 8.4% in 1 year, the total amount of property, which means that in a perfect world, if there weren't going to be state budget cuts or new challenges, you theoretically could cut taxes, theoretically, 8.4% and have the same amount of money come in. Do you think this is going to help us not raise taxes in the coming year, or do you feel that the challenges coming from Hartford are going to overwhelm this and this will just help us stem that tide?
Well, I'm hoping that it will help us not raise taxes. And, you know, we'll see what happens in Hartford, but we've got to have enough money to run city government. So we're going to be conservative in our budget proposals, but we've got to be smart, because we can't have so few police that we end up paying more money through overtime.
Right.
And same thing for fire. And we've got to adequately fund what we're required to fund our New Haven public schools.
So 8.4%, are you going to be talking about that tonight?
I think that you're going to hear 8.4%.
We're
kind of proud of that.
Yeah, I mean,
it shows we're
growing.
Do
you have a little party or anything? Do you stop among all the craziness government and say, whoa, look at the sheet that our assessor just brought to us? We had eight. I mean, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
8.4% in 1 year. I mean, some cities are losing their tax base. What do you do to mark that? Do you guys like have any kind of like a party in the office or anything like that?
Maybe we should. It's a great idea. But,
I mean, it's something worth celebrating.
I think it's worth celebrating.
I mean, then before we start fighting about it again, because everyone says, oh, that means you're going to raise my taxes, or some neighborhoods go up a lot more than others. Although I'm told commercial property went higher than residential. Residential went up.
Right.
And looking over the last 5 years, residential property values went up 7%. Commercial went 16%.
Yes.
So it's going to hit businesses a little harder.
Right. And, you know, they're going to be in some of the businesses, especially the apartments that we have in the city. You know, they're a little... They're saying ouch, but you know, they charge a lot for their apartments.
But it's a barometer. Something's going right.
Something's going right.
If your grand list goes up,
absolutely. People are building properties worth more. When you sell your property, you're earning a lot more. So
you're going to march in with the honor guard tonight?
Yes.
Is that fun?
It is kind of fun.
Yeah, they get dressed up in their costumes and they usher you like you're dignitary, which I guess you are, right?
I think I don't know.
Her honor, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's what they say. So, yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Well, good luck tonight on your State of the City.
All right.
Well, good luck on Wednesday up at the Capitol for day one. We'll be watching you every step of the way and hope that you get a day off at some point.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And
but not at 11 a.m. on Monday when you came in for Mayor Monday yet again. Thank you so much for coming into our studio and filling us in, Mayor Tony Harp, on what's going on in our great city in New Haven.
Well, thank you. It's been great, and you have a wonderful week.
You too. Thank you for joining us on Dateline New Haven. Thanks to Bertram Moses and Devlin PC and Gateway Community College for providing financial support for today's show. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience performing I Wish I Knew How It'd Feel to Be Free from the CD A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass reminding us all that we do know what it feels like to be free. We just have to book our flight. Book your flight and fly free with us all day and night here at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.